Hi, friends. Back for chapter 4 of the Survivor Diaries avalanche story. And if you remember, at the end of chapter 3, the last thing that happened was that Ashley crawled out of her snow hole that she got buried in by the avalanche. And when she looked out and around, do you remember what she saw? Her brother Ryan's ski pole sticking out of the snow. Chapter 4. I yanked up my pack. I tore it open and I snatched the collapsible shovel from inside. After crawling frantically to the ski pole, remember her leg was hurt, I extended the shovel to prepare for digging. I didn't need the avalanche probe to find Ryan. I knew he was buried under the snow near the pole. My brother was buried under the snow. I had to move fast. He was going to run out of air. How long since the avalanche? How long did I take after I dug myself out? I had sat for too long in shock. How could I have sat there, wasting precious seconds? Hang on, Rye, I'm here. The packed snow was hard to break, even with the shovel. It was fluid at first, but now that it had settled, it was feeling more like concrete. Carefully digging down along the pole so as not to hit him, I uncovered Ryan's hand. I grabbed it and I squeezed it. A cry escaped me when he squeezed back. It frightened me. So much relief then flooded through me. I started to sob. I've got you. I began to scrape away more snow with my hands down to his elbow. It was his right hand, so I knew which way he was facing. Thankfully, he had stuck his pole up just in time. Otherwise, how would I have known where he was? I can't keep thinking about that. I have to keep digging. I doubled my speed, desperate to get to his face, racing the clock. How long? Was he doing his breathing counts? The blackness and tight, confined space were so fresh in my mind, I knew exactly how he felt down there. Had he filled his lungs with snow before it buried him? How much room did he have? I had to get him. Dig. I worked feverishly. My left glove raked off, my bare hand leaving red smears on the snow. One of the nails on my left hand was broken and bleeding. I dug at least 3 feet already. How long did I have to go before showing his face? Seconds ticked by, running out of time, running out of air. The scene around me was so still, deathly quiet after all the slamming and crashing and thundering. Snow fell, muffling sounds even more. I was in my own wide-awake nightmare, digging for my brother's life. Finally, I felt his nose. I scooped the snow away from his mouth, and he gasped. Oh, I slumped forward, nearly toppling onto the hole with him. Pain was slicing in my knee. It's okay, I've got you, I said. Take a deep breath. Scraping farther, I uncovered the rest of his head. His face had cuts all over it. I used the shovel and the last of my energy to dig out the rest of his body. Ryan flailed to get free. I reached to guide his arms out of the pack. He helped me pull his legs out from the hole that had entombed him. Are you okay? I asked. He crawled out on top of the snow, taking gulps of breath. His head was bare, snow clumped in his hair. He had lost his helmet and hat somewhere. I didn't see any injuries besides the scrapes on his face. When I started thinking about what would have happened if I'd been a few minutes slower, my head pounded. I began to shake. We collapsed together in the snow. The melting ice cooled on my skin. What do we do now? I asked my brother. This was bad. It was too cold out here to be wet. We were miles away from the shelter. We had to get warm. Ryan considered me for a moment as he rubbed a large bump on his head. Who are you? He asked. Chapter 5. I stared at my brother. What? I said. Who are you? Ryan repeated, then looked around blankly. Where am I? My heart broke into pieces. How could he not know me? I pulled in a shaky breath. We were in an avalanche. I think something hit your head. I'm your twin sister. Mom and Dad don't know where we are. They think we're over there on the next trail. I paused as the reality sank in. And we have to get warm while we wait for help to come. I glanced at our surroundings, remembering from our training that we needed to move from the base of the avalanche chute. Another avalanche could follow the same route at any minute. Ryan picked up a handful of snow, strangely calm. Should we make a fire? Yeah, good, I said. That's a good idea. I've got a lighter in my pack. He was the one person in the whole world I could count on to always have my back. Even when I wanted to strangle him, I knew he was there to protect me. How could he seem so unreliable now? Best not to dwell at the moment, I thought, on why my own brother didn't even know me. I tried to rise. Oh, the pain in my knee reminded me of a thundering snowslide. I wanted to curl into a ball and just wait for help. Wait for Ryan to do something. But Ryan just sat there watching me. We were in a deep ravine at the base of the mountain. The wide path the avalanche took was easy to trace from the havoc of snapped trees and debris in its wake. Solid snow was packed around the trees, only the tips showing on some of them. I crawled to my pack next to the hole Ryan had been in. I reached in to lift his pack too. Dragging both packs, I pulled myself towards the trees, away from the destruction the avalanche had spewed. I gritted my teeth in pain each time my knee flexed. Ryan tried to follow me, but sank into the deep snow. He climbed back out, and then he looked around again. The snow was too deep to go anywhere. He was right. Skis would have helped us stay on top of the snow, but we'd lost them. Ryan only had one pole. What were we going to do? Panic was roaring through my body. I focused on the packs in my hands. We had these, at least. The skis are lost, but it's okay, I said, trying to soothe both of us. We don't have to go too far. I crawled until I made it out of the danger zone and reached a tree with snow piled high on one side and a depression on the other. Ryan followed me. My movements had warmed me, but Ryan was shivering. I inched over and I put my hat on his bare head. Go collect wood for a fire, I told him, pointing into the spruce stand behind us. He struggled to the trees and began to snap branches. I pulled the fire starter from my pack. Dad had just made us fire at lunch, so I copied everything that he had done. When Ryan returned with a wide, broken tree trunk, I used that as a base for the fire so that it wouldn't burn down into the hole in the snow. Then I piled dried bark and twigs on top of two fire starters, and I got the sticks from my pack. When I flicked the lighter with my freezing thumb, the flames caught on the fire starter immediately. Then it snapped and crackled. Falling snow sizzled on the fire, but I fed it larger twigs, and the little flames grew. I made sure to zip up the lighter inside my pocket. We couldn't afford to lose it. We held our hands toward the warmth of the fire, and I glanced at Ryan's face as he sat beside me. The bump on his forehead looked worse than it had when I first pulled him out. It was starting to swell, bigger. Dad had the first aid kit. Where were Mom and Dad now? Had they begun searching for us? Would they see our tracks? The falling snow seemed to answer me. What if they didn't see our tracks? I cupped my hands around my mouth. Help! We're down here! My throat was flailing, and it hurt from yelling. My voice came out hoarse, raspy, shaky. Ryan's eyes widened as he stared at me. They'll find us, I said, quieter. I made a snowball, and I lightly brushed it across Ryan's forehead. He winced. Our eyes met, and my heart squeezed. One time when we were young, we had a fight waiting for the school bus. Do you remember that? Ryan blinked. You whipped your jacket so hard at me that I whipped you back with mine, and the zipper hit you in the forehead. That made you even madder, so you whipped me again harder, both sides. I made a motion to show him how he whipped the jacket at me. The zipper hit me on each ear. We both ran into the house crying, holding our ears and faces. Mom gave us ice cubes and told us to go catch the bus. It was coming down the hill. We hurried out and waited for the bus stop, then climbed in, still fuming. We sat far apart from each other. Ryan's mouth started to curl up a little, so I kept going. Maybe I was thinking he started to recognize this story. I had to hold an ice cube in each hand, sliding them carefully over my sore ears. The ice dripped down my forearms. When I glanced back at you, I was happy to see that you were doing the same on your forehead. Your face was all red and blotchy, too. I looked at his face now, purple and blotchy. I smoothed back the hair that was sticking out of his hat. The snow melted and slid on his skin. It won't be long before Mom and Dad come to get us, I said. Ryan watched me. It was eerie to see his eyes without the recognition there. He was like a different person, a more fragile Ryan. My bottom lip quivered. I turned to my pack, and I busied myself with searching for my puffy jacket, which was compressed and sitting at the bottom. Ryan watched and pulled out his own jacket. He seemed to be doing things on autopilot. My knee was throbbing. To see it, I had to roll up my soft shell outer pants, lightweight fleece pants, and my base layer thermals. My knee was slightly red and swollen, but it didn't look as bad as it felt. I rubbed a ball of snow on it like I had done to Ryan's forehead. "I think it's sprained," I said. "Wrap it with an elastic bandage," Ryan said. I studied him closely. He could remember years ago when he sprained his ankle and worse and wore an elastic bandage, but he couldn't remember me? Debbie Martin had pushed him off the slide at the park, and he was the one who sprained his ankle, but I was the one who cried. "That would be a good idea if we had one," I said, wishing I still had my mohair skins. But they'd been devoured, along with my skis, by the avalanche. I dumped the contents of my pack onto my lap and sorted through what we had. Spare fleece gloves, a spare thin hat, a frozen granola bar, and a tiny folded emergency blanket, which was really just a thin sheet that looked like tinfoil. I stuffed the granola bar in my pocket before pulling on the gloves and hat. There was also my transceiver, an avalanche probe, a ski repair kit with duct tape, glop stopper wax, and ski straps. No elastic bandage. My nearly empty stainless steel water bottle was the only thing in my pack. I filled it with snow and I set it beside the fire. Then I went through Ryan's pack. He had a multi-tool with a knife, an avalanche probe, a shovel, an empty water bottle, an emergency blanket, a coil of light rope, duct tape, and a candle. He filled his bottle with snow and he set it next to mine. He was copying what I was doing. All my life I'd wanted to be different from my brother, to have talents that made me stand out. I don't have a smart school brain like Ryan. I'm not as athletic. Being his twin has always made me even more average in comparison. And now he was copying me. Ryan fed the fire, and the smoke drifted up and stung my eyes. The fire needed a lot of fuel to keep burning. How long would we be here? I searched the sky, and I noticed it was late afternoon. I picked up the duct tape and the ski straps. Could I make something for my knee? I needed something wider, stretchy. I reached into my pants and I gave myself a wedgie. Using Ryan's knife, I sliced my underwear off at my hip. Of all the days to wear my Wonder Woman undies, I wrapped the underwear around my knee like a bandage. I flexed my knee experimentally and I winced. Holding the ski straps in place with one stretched out hand along the side of my kneecap, I used the other to grab the duct tape. I wrapped the tape once around the top of my knee and then again below. The tape looked like it would stay in place. I glanced up to see Ryan watching. No joke about the underwear. No one teasing comment from him. Not a one. My throat ached. That one thing seemed to be the last straw. As I rolled my pant legs back down and I tucked them into my ski boots, hot tears started rolling down my face. "We're gonna be okay," I said, sniffling. "They're gonna come get us soon." As I said it, the wind gusted and drove sleet into our faces. I tried not to notice the lengthening shadows. I could feel the temperature dropping already. Even though my twin was sitting beside me, for the first time in my whole life, I felt very alone.